You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Yes, I'm here. I'm live. It sounds a little funky. I'm phoning into my own show. Shano is on the other end. Shano has been running our board and keeping things alive. He's our associate producer here in Washington, D.C. Hey, Shano.
How you doing, Tom? Welcome back.
Thank you. Thank you so much, and thank you for everything that you've been doing, and special thanks to Mike Papantonio, Mike Newcomb, and Carl Frisch for filling in for me, and special thanks to you, Shano, for you and Danielle bringing over the power supply to me when I was in the hospital.
No problem.
And all you just done yeoman's work, and Paul and Jim have just done spectacular work. It's great. So
you are welcome.
And just let everybody know because I am coming in by telephone today. I'm not yet unwired from all the junk and tubes and whatnot that I have in me that I'm doing the show from home. And so, if the telephone gods drop me, then Shane, you'll hop in and finish a rant or take a call or whatever you want.
We'll do our best here.
While I'm calling back in, so.
You got it.
Thank you, Shane.
No problem.
So, and lots and lots of people were asking, what happened? Why were you gone so long? Because my original plan was to be gone a week and a half, right? To Tuesday through Friday and then the whole following week because I don't want to get into all the gory details, but I was scheduled for a minor laparoscopic surgery, a long-standing annoying problem with my prostate that any guy who's over 40 can probably tell you something about, and therefore I'll leave it at that, spare you the details. This was supposed to be a one-week recovery, and I was going to be back, and I wouldn't have ever even said anything about it. That was my vacation. The first time in my life I go to a hospital. But what happened was... 5-6 days after the surgery, something busted inside, and I started leaking, and my abdomen started filling up with urine, which isn't supposed to be there. So I went to the ER. That was an amazing experience, going to a big city ER, to George Washington Hospital here in Washington, D.C., and spent 4 days there, and 2 CAT scans, and got drilled and drained, and I'm still recovering from it. Friday, I've got another visit to the hospital, and that will be the last of it. So I'm doubting that I'll be able to do the show Friday just because of the scheduling on that, but we'll see. But here I am now. And we had a wild experience in the emergency room. Went in there around 5 p.m. It was around, took until around 9 by the time I was situated in the room, but there was a lot being done. But there was one guy on one side of me who was having a psychotic episode. There was another person on the other side who was being diagnosed with a severe case of strep throat. Louise refused to leave me alone. She shouldn't have been there. Here she is on chemotherapy in a hospital, right? In a big city ER room. There was lots and lots of diseases, and she had a compromised immune system. And so we're just kind of huddling in our little cubicle trying to keep the bugs away from her. And thank goodness they did, and she's fine. But my big takeaway from this is that the real heroes of our healthcare system are our nurses. I was just blown away by the quality of the nurses. It was just exceptional. And so anyhow, that's Tom's, grand adventure. Like I said, my first time in the hospital. Don't ever want to do it again. It was just an amazing time. And I mean, when I went back into the ER, I genuinely felt like I was dying. I've never had that feeling in my life before, like my body's shutting down. There's something horribly, horribly wrong. And, that night they hadn't drained anything out yet, and I was still really, really sick. I turned to my side, and all of a sudden my mother was standing there. I better quit telling this story right now. But anyhow, she just called my name. Left. So it's been a wild couple of weeks. So let's get into politics here and what's going on. Paul Ryan, of all people, has been nominated Vice President of the United States in the Republican ticket during the time that I was gone. Boy, did I want to be on the air when that happened. Amazing. And I want to share with you today the Godwin's Law is this, you know, kind of saying that whoever mentions Hitler first loses the political argument. Well, back in 1944, when he was running for re-election, Franklin Roosevelt dared to do that. And the parallels between then and now will absolutely blow your mind, absolutely amaze you. I want to get into that in some detail and share that with you. So we're gonna get into that. Pick up your phone calls. Also, just you know what's going on in the world today. I mean, it's really there's a lot. Obviously, the Todd Akin story. Todd Akin was what he was. But this guy, this poor schlub, what he was trying to do was give some science to the official GOP policy that if a woman is raped, she shouldn't have access to abortion services, even if it's the day after pill. And, you know, this theory that if women are sufficiently traumatized, they don't get pregnant. This has been around for thousands of years, pushed by men to justify rape. And in fact, it wasn't until the late 1700s after Van Leeuwenhoek, and my recollection is it was like 1783 or something, but I'm, you know, anyhow, it wasn't until the late 1700s that, we even knew that modern science, as it were, knew that, women were contributing to the process of producing babies. There used to be this thing called the homunculus theory, which was that, sperm were actually little tiny people. And that when people had sex, then, you know, one of those little tiny people would, you know, win the day and end up growing in the woman's womb. And she was basically a toaster oven, and the guy was responsible for the baby. And in other words, you know, it's the woman's role was just radically diminished. And this is, you know, part of the centuries of oppression of women. And also, you know, it fed into that period. So I think it's important for us to understand the genesis of these things. Mitt Romney refusing to discuss whether he would even support abortion coverage for a servicewoman who has been raped. So anyhow, as you know, I have very mixed feelings about that whole topic. I think we need to have a good national discussion about it. We need to have reasonable and national policies. It's been all over the place. It's been a mess, but amazing. Judge down in Texas says, hey, if Obama's reelected, we're going to have civil unrest, civil disobedience, civil war, maybe. He says, we're talking Lexington Concord. Take up arms and get rid of the guy. Yeah, right. He says he's going to stand in front of their armored personnel carrier, and so you're not coming here to Lubbock. This guy thinks that he is the Tiananmen Square guy, right? I don't know how else he thinks that he's the Tiananmen Square guy. And he's going to do it, and he's going to stand there, and he's going to stop the United Nations. He says, the blue hats. This is Judge Tom Head, a county judge in Lubbock, Texas. The blue hats, those UN troops, you know, they're going to come and take over our sovereignty. Judge Head, if you're listening, and I realize you're not, but maybe somebody will send you a video or a clip of this. We've already lost most of our sovereignty, and we lost it through trade policies that started during the Nixon administration and have been pushed for three decades by both parties, in particular by the Republican Party, but the Democratic Party is not playing this. And, you know, we've got a hell of a lot more to worry about from ExxonMobil or General Electric than we do the United Nations. If you're concerned about sovereignty, if you're concerned about the reality, the possibility of, you know, what the future bears for America and, you know, Americans being able to do and say what they want and, you know, buy their own products and eat food that actually is labeled as having GMO things in it. So, Judge Head, you know, check it out. It's transnational corporations that are the risk, not the U.N. We'll be right back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And what happens if this hurricane hits Tampa, Hurricane Isaac? Is this God telling the GOP he doesn't like their global warming policy?
Tom Hartman.
Welcome back. Your dreams were your ticket out. Welcome back.
Well, thank you, Shano, for that. I'm nearly back. I'm nearly back. I will be back in the studio next week, but I still have I still have one more surgical procedure I've got to go through on Friday to take care of what was apparently a screw up or something popped or heaven only knows. But anyhow, I will get better. This too shall pass, right? And all those other cliches. What doesn't kill you makes you stronger, et cetera. I want to get into this rant about FDR and Hitler, but it's going to take more than just a couple of minutes. So I'm going to do it at the bottom of the hour, I think. And we'll just pick up a few phone calls right now. We're going to treat today. I mean, I've got a bunch of news stories here I'll be throwing in as we go through the day. But let's also kind of treat it as an anything goes Friday. And, if there's anything you want to talk about, anything that seems important and that's in the news, your thoughts on it. I did raise the question before we went into the break. You know, this Hurricane Isaac is forming out in the Atlantic Ocean, and it looks like there's a possibility. I mean, we're talking probably single digit percentages, but there's a possibility that this hurricane could end up hitting Tampa at the same time that the RNC is in Tampa, and the mayor of Tampa has come out and said if that happens, we're going to call off the convention. So nature's way, I mean, to use Thomas Jefferson's phrase in the Declaration of Independence, nature's God, is that nature's way of telling us that we're the mess of Mother Nature, and Mother Nature is not all that pleased. So, anyhow, we'll pick up some phone calls here. Randall in Prairie du Chien, Wisconsin. Hey, Randall, what's up?
Hello, Tom. I got a welcome back poem for you, written by a guy, Arthur Giederman, born in 1871, about the voting rights.
Uh-huh.
Okay, it's called Strictly Germ-Proof Voting, with apologies to Arthur Giederman.
Okay, is this short, Randall? Because we try to discourage people from reading on the air. Okay, go for it.
The antiseptic baby and the anti-prophylactic right-wing pup were politicking in the Fox News garden when the bunny gambled up. They looked upon the creature with a loathing undisguised. It wasn't disinfected and it wasn't sterilized. They said it was a microbe and a hotbed of disease. They steamed it in a vapor of 1,000-odd degrees. They froze it in a freezer that was cold as banished hope and washed it in permanganate with carbolated soap. In sulfurated hydrogen, they steeped its wriggly ears. They trimmed its frisky whiskers with a pair of hard-boiled shears. They donned their rubber mittens and they took it by the hand and elected it a member of the fumigated band. There's not a micrococcus in the Fox News garden where they play. They bathe in pure ideology a dozen times a day.
Yeah.
Each imbibes his rations from a hygienic cup, the bunny and the baby and anti-prophylactic.
Yeah. Randall, I'm getting it. And thank you for sharing that with us. Like I said, we discourage people from calling in and reading things on the air, and I don't want to start a trend here. But sounds like a pretty good parody or pastiche there. Sounds like a very good one. Marilyn in Oakland, California. Hey, Marilyn, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom, thanks. I'm glad you're back. Here's my issue, voting rights. Computerized voting is one of the most dangerous ways we can handle our voting. So I have started an online petition that I'd like to publicize called End Computerized Voting. People who are interested can go to signon.org, signon.org, click the little search button at the top, and search for End Computerized Voting, and just sign it.
Yeah, that's great.
I was a mainframe programmer. I know how really vulnerable our voting is.
You know, if hackers can bring down the homepage of the CIA, they can certainly change an election. I mean, this should be common sense, right? It should just be absolutely common sense. You know, there's a deal over at the change.org, whitehouse.gov, barackobama.com, one of those sites, probably all of them, where if you get a certain number, I think it's 15,000 now, of people who sign your petition, then the House will respond.
Aha, that would be great. I'd love to find out.
I would encourage you to get over there and check it out.
So far.
Okay. Well, good luck, Marilyn. Thanks a lot for the call and letting us know all about it. I'm so pleased that you're out there doing it. Susan in Portland, listening on KPOJ. Hey, Susan, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I'm so glad you're back and healthy. Yes. I just want to talk about my concern about the incredible disrespect that is being shown to President Obama recently. I mean, not like it just started, but it just feels to me in this campaign like You know, I'm just feeling so much more name-calling and vindictive and attacking. And, I mean, I know when Bush was running against Obama, you know, obviously.
You mean McCain?
Or, yes, I'm sorry. Yeah, lapse there. That, you know, I mean, obviously the Democrats and more within ourselves, I felt, were obviously, you know, critical and attacking, but not... It didn't seem to be occurring on the, you know, between the candidates.
Yeah, and McCain even had the integrity, you know, when that one woman said, you know, he's a Muslim. And he said, no, he's not a Muslim. He's a good man. He's an American. I disagree with him.
Yeah.
I mean, John McCain had, like, one of the most high integrity moments of the entire campaign. We did that, but although his campaign was doing race
really baiting. Touching, and yeah, I had a lot of respect for that. But I just wondered if you wanted to speak on that, I can hang up, but...
Well, I think you said it very well. The one thing that I would add to that, Susan, is that there's a lot of what their goal, the goal that Karl Rove and Frank Luntz and the Koch brothers and the guys who are the big bucks guys behind this, the billionaires who are trying to create an America that's an America, you know, for billionaires and the rest of us are just serfs. What they're trying to do with President Obama is turn him into an other so that particularly, you know, white working class people, but pretty much everybody will figure out some way to say, oh, no, he's not one of us, right? And so there, it's the otherization of Obama. And I think that that's the subtext to it. And I think, you know, part of it has to do with race. They use religion. They use, you know, positions. They use everything they can. And it's just, it's such a shame. It's not radical for politics. It's, you know, it's been done before, certainly. But it's having an African-American president makes it so much more easy. So it's a crime. Susan, thanks a lot for listening to KPOJ, and thanks a lot for the call.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
We'll be back. I'm going to share with you Franklin Roosevelt calling out the Republicans and using the name of Adolf Hitler right after this.
In olden days, a glimpse of stocking looked on to something shocking. Now heaven knows anything goes.
Well, sort of anything goes Friday. It's Tom's back Wednesday. Tom is back, and it's Wednesday. And you know, we'll talk about pretty much anything you want. But as I promised, I do want to just share this one rant with you. And, you know, it seems like the right-wingers, we call them Republicans here in the United States, but, you know, all over the world people know them as right-wingers. They haven't much changed their strategies over the years, you know, and that Romney and Ryan are actually following, and I've said so many times on this program, I've been saying this for a year, that if Mitt Romney's going to win the presidency, he's going to have to do it by lying. Because if the American people knew what the real policies of these people were, they would never go near them. So, anyhow, Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan are following this old pattern. There's this thing called Godwin's Law. The first person to use a Hitler comparison in an argument loses it. Well, call me a loser. But you'd also have to call President Franklin Roosevelt a loser, too. And by the way, he won this election. Because back in 1944, when he was running for re-election, he compared the Republicans' political strategy that year to Hitler. Here he is.
The opposition in this year has already imported into this campaign a very interesting thing because it's foreign. They have imported the propaganda technique invented by the dictators abroad. Remember, a number of years ago, there was a book, Mein Kampf, written by Hitler himself.
Written by Hitler himself. This is a U.S. presidential, sitting president of the United States, right? So, anyhow, Roosevelt didn't lose that year. He won, as I mentioned, proving Godwin's Law is wrong. And he won because he was bold enough to call out the Republicans for what they were doing, which was they were using Hitler's most powerful propaganda technique to sway voters. And that's what you just heard FDR say, that, you know, they're using one of the most powerful techniques that you might remember. There was this book called Mein Kampf by this guy named Adolf Hitler. Now, keep in mind, this is 1944. We're fighting World War II. Too much energy. So anyhow, what was that technique? is the question. What was that incredibly powerful propaganda technique that Franklin Roosevelt was calling out, that Hitler laid out in Mein Kampf? Well, in summary, it was tell the biggest, fattest lie you can. I mean, just such an outrageous lie that people are going, that's got to be true because nobody would ever say it if it wasn't, right? Tell the biggest lie you can and repeat it over and over again. Here's Franklin Roosevelt.
Remember, a number of years ago, there was a book, Mein Kampf, written by Hitler himself. The technique was all set out in Hitler's book, and it was copied by the aggressors of Italy and Japan. According to that technique, you should never use a small falsehood. Always a big one. For its very fantastic nature would make it more credible. If only you keep repeating it over and over and over again.
There you go. Tell a big lie, the most fantastic lie you can, and repeat it over and over and over again. In fact, then Roosevelt went on, and this is something that I think, you know, would I love to hear President Obama give the same. He wouldn't even have to put it in his own words, right? He could say, let me simply quote from a former president of the United States, Franklin Roosevelt. There was this man named Adolf Hitler who wrote this book called Mein Kampf. But in any case, you know, the big lies that they were telling back during Roosevelt's time, in some ways, were very similar to the ones now. Some were a little different. Here's Roosevelt actually calling out the Republicans after he first said, I mean, this is an in-sequence clip that you're hearing. The whole piece of the speech is about 13 minutes, but you're hearing these in order. So he's set it up, and now here's a few of the big lies that the Republicans were using in the election of 1944.
We have been told that it was not a Republican depression, but a Democratic depression from which this nation was saved in 1933. For another example, I learned much to my amazement that the policy of this administration was to keep men in the army when the war is over, because there might be no jobs for them in civil life.
Yeah. So, I mean, the Republicans, they were just making stuff up, right? I mean, that's what they do. They were just making stuff up. And Roosevelt just called them on it. Said, you know, this is not true. This is the big lie strategy. I'm not going to let them get away with it. You know, not only did Roosevelt identify the origin of the big lie strategy with Hitler and the Republicans in 44, he also identified the big lie strategy of Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan. Forget about the small lies. Use big lies. For example, you've all seen the ads, you know, Americans for Prosperity running these ads all over the country. Now Romney's got one of his own, but you know, it started out with Koch Brothers money. This is the group behind the AstroTurf, early AstroTurf Tea Party stuff, where they say, you know, the president has taken $700 billion out of Medicare and used it to pay for Obamacare. Now, here's what that's code for. If you're an older person and you're on Medicare or you're getting close to it, Obama's taking your money away and he's giving it to poor people. That's what it's code for. And everybody knows that politically it's, you know, nobody ever lost an election by beating up on poor people. So, and not to mention the racial and cultural elements there, but we'll just leave it at that. I mean, you know, for that purpose, you know, forget about it. And it's not true. Obama did reduce $700 billion in expenditures in the Medicare program over the next 5 years. Where did he take that money? Well, he took it out of the pockets mostly of United Healthcare, the big insurance companies. And what he did was he said, you know, we can provide these services at a fraction of the cost. We'll provide the services. Not one penny of benefit reduction is hitting older people in America. Not one penny. Nothing. Zip. Nada. It is literally a total lie that the Republicans are telling. And in fact, you know, what Obama did is making Medicare stronger and healthier. But the Republicans are just insisting on lying about that. The other thing that Obama got out was waste, fraud, and abuse, which is just, you know, it's a metaphor for another fancy way of saying the big insurance companies. But he strengthened the program. So, you know, if you say a lie over and over again, at least this is the theory of the Republicans, it will work. And it was, you know, it was Hitler's theory in the 40s, and it worked for him. And the same as the, you know, the Obamacare adds trillions to our national debt. No, in fact, it doesn't. It actually reduces the national debt. Another lie. In fact, PolitiFact called it a blatantly false lie. And it's a lie if you accuse the president of undoing welfare reform in a campaign ad like Mitt Romney is doing. Mitt Romney's got these ads saying, oh, yeah, you know, Obama, he's we want to put people on welfare back to work. Again, bash poor people. Right? Bashing poor people is a strategy that has always worked well for Republicans. And I think, you know, in part it's the old saying that, you know, working class Europeans know that they're working class people. Working class Americans think that they're temporarily inconvenienced millionaires. So there's not a shred of truth to any of this stuff. I mean, literally, not a shred of truth to any of it. But it got enough airtime. It's starting to work. People are actually starting to feed this back in focus groups and polls and things, saying, oh, yeah, Obama, he's taking money away from Medicare, from grandma, and giving it to poor people and stuff. Because the Republicans are telling this big lie over and over again. I believe that Obama should be calling out the liars, and I think he should use the word lie to do it. Because if he doesn't, the propaganda machine on the right is not going to be stopped. And he could be left wondering on November 7th, you know, what happened? I told the truth. You know, I played the game correctly. But, you know, Rove and the Koch brothers and the Republicans, they lied. How could people believe that? Well, Mr. President, it has happened in the past, and the way to call it out is to call it out for what it is. Oh, and one other thing. In that same speech that Roosevelt called out Republicans for using Hitler's techniques, the big lie technique, he also called them out for suppressing the vote, which just so happens to be the Republican strategy today, too, right alongside with lying. Here's FDR.
Well, there are some political candidates who think that they may have a chance of election if only the total vote is small enough.
Yeah, if only the total vote is small enough, then we can win. We can, you know. And they were trying to suppress the vote back in the 40s, and of course they're trying to suppress the vote right now. So anyhow, it's pretty amazing, really, when you consider it. It's pretty amazing. Cameron in Denver, listening on AM 760. Hey, Cameron, what's up?
Hey, surprisingly, I think I'm right on topic here.
Okay,
I got a letter from my congressman. I'm in Colorado, Congressman Mike Kaufman, Republican, mm-hmm. talking about $500 bill or $500 billion bill. Mentioned kind of the death panels. He doesn't call them the death panels. And talked about his mom being on welfare and doesn't want to change it for her. But I noticed that he wants to change it for me because I'm 50.
Yep. Yeah, you paid into it for 20, 30 years of your life, and you're going to get nothing out of it. It's insane. Cameron, thank you for confirming and validating the big lie is alive and well in the Republican Party. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
We'll be back in just a second with more of your thoughts on, is it possible, is it even possible today for a politician to point to Hitler and say, it's being done again?
Olden days, a glimpse of stocking was looked on his trumpet.
Welcome back, Tom. I'm here with you. Back from the dead. Or nearly dead. I don't know if I was really dying or not, but I'll tell you, I sure felt like it. I've never in my life had that sensation where I just had this deep certainty that I was dying and discovering that my body was being poisoned. You know, it's just an amazing experience, absolutely amazing experience that I hope never to have again. And boy, do I have empathy for the folks in the hospital, you know, right now going through tough times. And, you know, eventually it gets us all, right? The Grim Reaper. We really need a healthcare system in this country that has a little more dignity attached to it, I think, in a lot of ways. Aram in Grapevine, Texas. Hey, Aram, what's up?
Hey, get well, Tom. I was told time is short to be fast. I would have told you more about your health. I want to talk about this Todd character. I'm a mad supporter. Mothers Against Drunk Drivers. I watch over my police department, make sure that the drunk drivers don't get away with it. But I sure as hell not for banning the sale or consumption of alcohol. Why don't these right wingers put their money where their mouth is, form a not-for-profit corporation to adopt these children instead of going and bombing the healthcare clinics?
Yeah.
Change the abortion laws.
Yeah, there actually are some groups that are doing that, and the Catholic Church has actually been at the forefront of doing that for centuries. And so, you know, this is not a black and white thing. It's not, you know, good and evil people on either side. There are mixed motives. There are people like, you know, Ralph Reed, who are just plain old hustlers. There are people who are true believers. There's a whole wide variety of them, but there are some really good people who are working for adoption because they don't believe in abortion. And you know, I respect that work. I you know, politically, I don't agree with their perspective, but I respect that work. And I think that we need to have, like I said earlier, we need to have a rational, you know, depersonalized, a rational conversation in this country about this issue. And frankly, it's a conversation that needs to be had by a bunch of women, not a couple guys like you and me. So, Aram, I appreciate the call, and thanks a lot for listening on Sirius Satellite Radio there. Lloyd in Yarva, Linda. Hey, Lloyd, what's up?
Hi, how are you?
I'm getting better every day, Lloyd.
I sympathize with you being the person who slugs down soft palmetto and gets up two times a night. I'm calling about, on the show previous to yours, a guy called in and talked about Mormonism, and I was, while I am a Mormon who does not support Romney at all, I do get a little concerned about some of the stuff that people say about the Mormon Church. And I think what we're doing is the same thing that they did to Obama in his first campaign. It's just not fair to use that against him. And
you mean the Reverend Wright thing?
Yeah.
I'm pretty ambivalent about using Mormonism against Mitt Romney. Although the fact of the matter is that Obama's affiliation with Reverend Wright, I think, was more, you know, to some extent spiritual, but I think it was more political. The churches, particularly in African American communities, tend to be, you know, political centers, not political in the old-fashioned sense, but community centers, you know, places where people come together and work, and that's a very well-known, very famous, and very good church. And you know, Reverend Wright said something that was taken out of context and used to beat up Obama with. On the other hand, but you know, Obama was not a preacher in the church. He wasn't a bishop. He wasn't all those other things. You know, Romney really worked his way all the way up the top of his church, and one of the things that I would just like to hear him say is that he thinks that his church was wrong for not allowing African Americans until the 1970s into the church, for example. But, you know, I doubt we'll hear it coming. But Lloyd, thanks a lot for the call. Good to hear from you. I appreciate it. And if you're tempted to discuss my health issues, please restrain yourself. I don't want to talk about it on the air. Denise in Tampa. Hey, Denise, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Big fan of your show. I was just calling because there's been something that there's a billboard along our parkway, and if you're familiar, it's probably not that far from the Tampa airport. So if anybody flying in for the convention wants to check it out, just head north for about 3 exits. And it's a billboard that's in red, white, and blue, and it's paid for by the Republican Committee, the Republican Party, and it says Obama supports abortion and gay marriage. And if that doesn't vocalize what this election means to the Republican Party, I mean, what they really, apart from, you know, protecting the tax cuts of the 1%, I mean, that just tells you in a nutshell what the issues are for them.
Well, really what it tells you is what they want the issues to be, because they don't want the fact that if Paul Ryan's plan went through Congress, Mitt Romney's tax rate would drop from 13% to 1%. They don't want people to know that. They don't want people to know that Paul Ryan himself would get a giant tax break under his tax plan, but that, you know, pretty much anybody making under $60,000 is going to see their taxes go up. They don't want to talk about those real issues, and so they're pulling out God, gays, guns, abortion, whatever, you know, you can come up with, and it's a serious attempt to distract. And so you're right. It's what the Republicans are trying to make it all about. They're not going to say, yeah, we're the party of the rich and powerful, but
you know, Harry Truman started calling him out on that. We've known this for so, so long. So anyhow, thanks a lot for the call. Heads up on the billboard there. Tom in Bradenton, Florida. Hey, Tom, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I just wanted to report a couple of things I saw in the local Tampa news real quick. And one thing to keep the conversation going about your last caller, there was a billboard put up in Sarasota. It just said, repeal Obama, and somebody went up there and removed the word repeal, and whoever GOP group put it up is in all in arms, and they're trying to blame thugs from Chicago for doing it, which I think is ridiculous. But the other thing I wanted to report is that a little troubling. There was a report on Channel 8 News here in Tampa last night about police doing riot patrol drills.
Mm-hmm.
Full regalia, mounted on horses, tear gas, and because I think what went on here, Tom, is they leased out a lot of the parks close to the convention center maybe a year or two ago and trying to create a buffer zone around it. And it'll be really interesting to see if people can protest, because in front of the arena, it's where the Tampa Bay Lightning play. It's a big area.
Yeah, and publicly funded, by the way. And the Republicans' theme is going to be, you built it. No, you built it. But yeah, we saw this in the last ones too. I was there in both Denver and Minneapolis, and it's amazing how hyper militarized the police were. Thanks a lot for the call. We'll be back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And pleased to be back after what was supposed to be a minor surgical procedure turned into an emergency and now slowly healing. So here I am with tubes sticking out of me. Therefore, coming in by telephone. But I am here. I am with you and glad to be here. Tampa authorities have emptied a jail in anticipation of mass arrests at the GOP convention. Surprise, surprise. It's funny how we criticize that kind of thing in other countries, but here we just go, oh, yeah, yeah, all right, yeah. And so anyway, but we're gonna run today as if it was Anything Goes Friday. There's not an awful lot in the news that is new news beyond the political stuff. And so let's see where you want to go with this. Michael, in Eureka, California. Hey, Michael, what's on your mind?
Hi, Tom. Good to have you back.
Thank you.
You mentioned earlier about, you know, that our guest did, that, you know, that that Obama should be rebutting some of these lies, which, you know, from what I can see, he has been, but, you know, in as much as he can get media attention and make ads, but he's already going into the red, you might say, on his spending, because he's earning, his income right now is $25 million a month less than Romney's is.
Right.
And that's not counting the PACs. The PACs, Romney's PACs, are outspending them 8-1 right now.
Yep.
It's ridiculous. And as we know, 8-1 was the recipe for the Wisconsin defeat, or
yes,
a win,
yeah,
whichever way you want to look at it,
yeah,
you know, with Scott Walker.
Yeah, that's the bad news. The good news is that Meg Whitman and Carly Fiorina both tried this in California, and the more money that they threw in, the more it seemed like people got offended by them. So I think the magic formula here, and I haven't yet seen a clear articulation of it, but I'd like to see it loud and soon from the Obama campaign, is that these billionaires are trying to buy the election, and their ads are full of lies. And when you see their ads, it should remind you that they're trying to buy the election to screw the middle class and help themselves. And the message needs to be almost that blunt. I mean, you know, really, really simple. It's like Romney getting
I agree, 100%.
Yeah, yeah. It's just got to be, you know, pretty straightforward and pretty clear. Thanks a lot for the call, Michael. Good to hear from you. Carl in Nashville, Tennessee. Hey, Carl, what's up?
Hey, I'm doing just fine. I hope you get well. Here's the thing as far as the money and how much they've spent. Sometimes you could spend so much and you're just not getting much from your return. I think the Obama, the campaign has been brilliant in this way. they spent a lot of money in the beginning, and they have successfully defined Mitt Romney. And I think that's crucial with the slow attention span here in America. You have to define your candidate. But it is the thing, man. Republican Party, it comes to a point where as an American citizen, I have to sit back and say, you know what? They're just what they are. When you have a guy like Hank Williams Jr., saying crazy racist stuff about the president and the people cheering instead of getting up and walking out, that's what they are. When you have their platform that you don't even want to give a woman a choice of getting an abortion after a brutal crime like rape, that's what you are. When you have guys, I'm going to tell you right now, I've seen a poll, I've never seen it before in my life. 94% of the black people in America support President Obama, and Romney gets zero. You even get 10 or 12% who think Fidel Castro is a good guy. I've never seen zero. That lets me know that people are seeing what this guy is all about. And finally, I've been very fortunate to have lifelong friends. I'm talking 25, 30-year long relationships with people. Never in my life with one of these men as teenagers or grown men have I ever wanted to take off all my clothes and go skinny dipping with fellas that's very close friends of mine. So with 50-year-old men plus, these guys are in their late 40s and 50s, who the hell is this?
Louise shared that story with me a day or so ago about those guys. They were over in Jerusalem, and it was the Sea of Galilee, I think it was, or the whatever the river is. It was the same river as the river. Was it the River Jordan? It was. I think it was the river that John. The Galilee.
No, it was the river that Jesus supposedly had walked on.
Right. Yeah. So that would be the Lake of Galilee, the Sea of Galilee. It's basically a big lake. I've been there. But my first thought was that the guy was just a super fundamentalist Christian, and that he wanted to be, you know, have full immersion baptism. And so I, you know, in my mind, I cut him some slack. And then as the story came out, it turns out that no, they'd been drinking and partying, and this guy just took all his clothes off and jumped in the water. It is pretty bizarre. It is very bizarre. Thanks a lot, Carl, for the call. Good to hear from you. Linda in Laurinburg, North Carolina. Do I have that right?
Yes.
Hey, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I was calling about the Ryan Romney plan for Medicare, and seniors over 55 would not be affected. And I'm over 55, so what I think they're going to do is, if they implemented that, everyone under 55 would stop paying into it.
Yeah.
And all the baby boomers would bankrupt it probably within a matter of months.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then
or years.
Everyone would be on vouchers.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I mean, keep in mind, Ronald Reagan recorded a 33 RPM LP of, you know, a long playing record. He recorded this record, and they mailed them out to activists, Republican activists all across the country back in the mid-1960s, saying that Medicare was the beginning of socialism in America. This was the beginning of, to quote Ronald Reagan, Soviet-style socialism. And the Republicans have never changed that position. They want to turn it, and they think that they genuinely think this is Soviet-style socialism, because they don't get it. I mean, they don't get what's going on there. And Shane, I missed what you said. I'm sorry. Oh, you've got the clip. Oh, great. Here, listen to this clip.
My name is Ronald Reagan. One of the traditional methods of imposing statism or socialism on a people has been by way of medicine. The doctor begins to lose freedoms. It's like telling a lie, and one leads to another. A doctor decides he wants to practice in one town, and the government has to say to him, you can't live in that town. They already have enough doctors. You have to go someplace else. All of us can see what happens once you establish the precedent that the government can determine a man's working place and his working methods. And behind it will come other federal programs that will invade every area of freedom as we have known it in this country. Until one day we will awake to find that we have socialism.
There you go. I was Ronald Reagan in the 1960s as Lyndon Johnson was proposing Medicare. So, Linda, you're right on. They are trying to bankrupt it. They're trying to destroy it. I mean, just plain old flat out. There's no other way to say it. Dennis in Minneapolis, Minnesota, listening on AM 950. Hey, Dennis, what's up?
Hi. Listen to you regularly. I've met you when you were here.
Great. Thank
when
you.
I go to a DFL fundraiser and talk to any DFL politician, I basically tell them to be blunt. And you just used that word a little bit ago. Be blunt and quit worrying about who doesn't like what you say.
Yep. Yep, absolutely. I think one of the problems is that a lot of the Obama campaign has been using language of 12th graders, and they need to be using language of 7th graders. And it's not because the American people are stupid. It's because they're busy and because the simple stuff gets through faster and more easily. And, we need to be pointed out. But you're absolutely right, Dennis. It's about being blunt. It's about calling liars liars, because that's what's going on. Dennis, thanks a lot for the call. Great to hear from you. It's 15 minutes past the hour. We'll be back with more right after this short opportunity for you to support your local station.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Tom Hartman here with you live on this Wednesday, isn't it? I believe it is. Indeed. We'll be back with more of your calls right after this. Tom Hartman here with you. I'm my apologies that the audio quality isn't the sterling, brilliant clarity that we normally have from our studio. I'm talking to you from home right now because I'm still wired to tubes and whatnot, but I just couldn't be off here anymore. It was making me crazy. And I'm starting to feel a whole lot better now. So now that whatever popped inside me has been healed up after all these weird times. So anyhow, let's get back to your calls. John in Philadelphia. Hey, John, what's on your mind?
Hey, I was just wondering if you think Mitt Romney would take the bait of defending outsourcing and even his outsourcing of jobs, and if he would take that bait, if it would be better to do that before or after the convention.
Yeah, it's going to depend on the context. I mean, his own company is a major outsourcer. His party doesn't speak in opposition to outsourcing. So what did you have in mind in terms of taking the bait?
Well, just, if you just ask him where he stands on outsourcing, because he's working so hard to distance himself from the time that Bain was doing all the outsourcing, but, then he also went and did it. So is he trying to distance himself because he believes it's wrong, or is it just a statement of fact that he's trying to make that, he wasn't there, and where does he stand on outsourcing? Because I think that's something even the Republican base, majority of them would be against.
I think I can pretty confidently say that Romney would say, it would be weasel words, but it would be words to the effect of, well, I support international trade, and international trade has some winners and some losers, and we need to make sure that the United States has winners and we're the best country in the world, quack, 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 quack. But the bottom line of the narrative is that, yeah, of course he supports outsourcing. I mean, when he was governor of Massachusetts, they outsourced the call centers of Massachusetts, the state offices. They outsourced those to India. This is when he was governor. I mean, this wasn't even when he was running a business. Talk about, supporting outsourcing. And I'm surprised that, frankly, that ad isn't running more often. John, thanks a lot for the call. Well said. Donna in Phoenix, Arizona. Hey, Donna, what's on your mind today?
Oh, this is relating to whether or not they're going to get to us, start charging people for miscarriages. A woman in Iowa arrested and sent to jail after she fell down the stairs while pregnant. Woman sentenced to 20 years for having a stillbirth. These are already, court cases. 15-year-old.
Although Donna, let me just, for our listeners, let's make it very clear. The cases that you're identifying are cases where there was enough evidence or enough probable cause that a jury, in some cases, and certainly a police officer, believed that what was going on was wrong. Was an intentional, something designed to kill a fetus.
I understand. I mean, there's a woman in Indiana that tried to commit suicide. She lived, the baby died, and she's in jail without parole. And I understand that part of it, but not all of them are. Utah and Georgia both tried to pass legislation making miscarriages or stillbirths investigatable.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the article that I'm reading is from 2011. To me, that just says how far behind the times we are from even really talking about this.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you at all. Thank you very much for the call. Well said. Johnny in Vacaville, California?
That's right. How are you, Tom? It's good to see you back. Are you back anyway? I'm calling because one thing leads to another, and something you said triggered something I know. I think the Republican Party has basically been taken over by the John Birch Society.
And you know who founded the John Birch Society?
Well, you told the audience a while back that it was the Koch brothers' dad.
Yep, Freddie Koch.
And so I know that Phyllis Schlafly, who is instrumental in helping bring social issues into the Republican Party as an issue, because she was instrumental in defeating the Equal Rights Amendment, and she's certainly rabidly anti-abortion, still has a role. She co-wrote A Choice, Not an Echo, way back during the Goldwater-Johnson election,
yep.
Or Goldwater-Kennedy election.
Mm-hmm.
And she's been instrumental in the party ever since. And the Koch brothers obviously are instrumental in the party. They have the money. She's certainly not poor, but they have the money, and she's brought the social issues in, let's say, during the 70s and the 80s.
Yeah, I'd say, in fact, the Koch brothers really own and run the Republican Party right now, and you know, all these other things are by and large distractions. This election is about one fundamental thing, and that is, will this be a nation that goes back to the old feudalistic style of economics and politics, where you've got a very small class of very wealthy ruling people and everybody else is basically property, they're serfs? Or will we move back in the direction that we were going before Ronald Reagan's presidency, where working people were respected, where working people get a decent pay, and where there is a, you know, it's a land of opportunity, the American dream? And that's I think you nailed it there, Johnny. Very well said. Thank you very much. Dee in Portland. Hey, Dee, got a minute to the break. What's up?
Well, I just wanted to say I can appreciate that we need to, especially in the Democratic Party leadership, as much as we possibly can, need to speak the exact truth about things. It's not so much the wording that people don't understand. It's dancing around the issues that have things so confused, and the fear that, you know, if we say the wrong thing, you know, like in one example I might give, if the majority of people who are going to vote either one way or the other have already made their minds up.
Yep.
And we got a so-called precious handful of undecided people who are having problems with trying to decide to go to the side of righteousness, to treat people the way they want to be treated. And so everybody is trying to be so careful about not offending them.
Yeah, I think you've identified it well. And it is astounding, really, when you look at the statistics, how many people are still undecided. How could you be undecided?
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Well, I think, you know, some folks are undecided because they're just busy. Some folks are undecided because they're not paying attention. And some folks are undecided because Reagan took apart our schools and we don't teach civics anymore. Anything Goes Wednesday. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. As live as I can get. I'm getting better here step by step after a pretty scary experience of what was supposed to be just a routine little surgery, and it turned into a disaster that brought me into the ER for 4 days. But I am back, and sort of, not yet quite back in the studio, but we're moving in that direction. And probably Bernie's going to drop by tomorrow, by the way, for Brunch with Bernie. So we're working on that, because Friday is the I got to go back into the hospital one more time. So just for the day. But anyway, back to what's going on. The Democrats are unveiling their convention lineup. Looks like there's going to be a lot of women involved. That's a good thing.
And Steve King's, he's kind of gone off the rails again. I think he kind of does. That's what he does for a living. I don't know how to describe it beyond that. Joe, but in any case, we're going to do Anything Goes Wednesday here. Joe in Albuquerque, listening on KABQ. Hey, Joe, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Hope you get better real soon.
Thank you. I am.
I was wondering, since the conventions are coming up,
mm-hmm.
In 2004, there was Zell Miller. He was a Democrat, and he railed against all the Democrats, and I assume he went Republican. Do you know anything about him and what Chuck Hagel might be doing now, too? Because he was kind of a moderate Republican. I doubt he went to Democrat, but I was just wondering if you knew anything about those two.
Chuck Hagel kind of got outed for his involvement in the voting machine company that he was the president of before he became elected, in a state where the Washington Post said that it was the upset election of the year, where Chuck Hagel won African-American districts that had never before voted for Republican, solid Democratic areas, not just African-American, solid Democratic areas. And, of course, he was the CEO of the voting machine company, and he did not disclose that. And that got disclosed a couple of years into his being a senator, and so I believe he's gone back into the business world. Zell Miller, I think, when he was having his shoutdown 4 years ago at the last convention with Chris Matthews and challenged him to a duel and all that sort of thing, it sure looked to me like, and I'm not representing myself as some sort of authority on this, but I think it looked to a lot of us, like Zell Miller was experiencing some kind of early onset dementia, Alzheimer's or dementia or something, or substance abuse, whatever, that he'd gone around the edge, and they continued to use him for a short while, but pretty soon he's kind of dropped out of sight. I think he's just retired now. That's the best that I know, Joe. So sorry, I don't have a more in-depth answer on either one, but I think that's what's going on there. Ben in Austin, Texas. Hey, Ben, what's up?
Hey, Tom, good to hear you back.
Thanks.
Hey, I don't know if I'm missing something here or if the left just isn't talking about it, but we all know that Paul Ryan's and Mitt Romney's voucher program will bankrupt Medicare and force everybody, the way they want it to go and so on. But last time I checked, he's been out there talking about how by having everyone use these vouchers to buy private health insurance, it would create competition in the health insurance industry. The last time I checked, health insurance industry was antitrust exempt, which is the very laws created to create competition and keep costs down for the consumer. So wouldn't that 100% just debunk his whole idea?
Yep. And what's astounding, it's the health insurance industry and the National Football League, oddly enough, are the two big exemptions to the antitrust law that have been written into law. And what's astounding is that Republicans go on like these Sunday shows and they go on news shows and they make these statements like, if we just, voucherize, they wouldn't use it that way. They'd say, if we reform Medicare so everybody gets a voucher and they can go out into that competitive marketplace with all those health insurance companies, and the reporter never says, hey, wait a minute, health insurance companies have an exemption to the antitrust laws. They can collude. They can get together and fix prices. You're absolutely right, Ben. And it's in many ways, I think it's more a sad commentary on the state of journalism in America of what's become infotainment than anything else. But you totally blew a hole in their argument and did it brilliantly. So, Phyllis in Peoria Heights, Illinois. Hey, Phyllis, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I'd like to add something to the Ronald Reagan's record that you were talking about.
Yeah.
Actually, the AMA paid him to do that,
mm-hmm.
and all the doctors' wives got organized and had tea parties and invited all their friends to their tea parties, and that's how that all got going.
Yep, you're absolutely right. I had forgotten that part of the story, and it's a good part of the story, and that was kind of one of the early AstroTurf, kind of the way that they got the tea party going is those were literally tea parties. Which is, find a group of people who have a common interest and then, fund, put in the money necessary to make things work and put the infrastructure in and buy the PR and get a charismatic front man and all that sort of thing. So excellent point, Phyllis. Thank you for adding to the historical record. You've done brilliant. Vi in Donovan, Missouri. Hey, Vi, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I'm in Donovan, and, I've got a problem with everyone jumping on this Todd Aikman. You know, because hey, he was duly elected by the
I'm not jumping on it. I'm saying he's speaking his truth, or at least he was. And everybody's entitled to their truth, no matter how crazy or bizarre it may be. The problem is when those truths start becoming laws and they're not actually based in reality. That's when you've got a problem.
Right. But, Tom, you know, if we look at the bigger picture, if he could stay on into November and actually, you know, keep running.
I think he's going to.
The GOP and Karl Rove didn't get to mess in the politics of the state of Missouri, which I would not like.
Yeah.
I would like to see him run against the senator from Missouri already, Senator
Claire McCaskill.
She's wonderful, and I think that she might beat him. I think things ought to stay just like they are and not let the GOP machine, Karl Rove and his outfit, piddle in the Senate race in our state. That's the way I feel about it.
I totally agree with you. The machine doesn't want him now because they view him as a liability. They threaten to pull $5 million from him, but he's saying, I'm not going anywhere, and his poll numbers aren't that horrible, although he has dropped somewhat. And I'm guessing that they're going to re-embrace him. He's going to have his David Vitter moment, you know, his conversion experience, and all will be well. And I do think that Claire McCaskill will have an easier time beating him than most others in the Republican field, which is why they were celebrating, the Democrats were celebrating his victory, because he's just such a right-wing wackadoodle. So I'm with you, Bob. Absolutely with you. Thanks a lot for the call. Pete in Roselle, Illinois. Hey, Pete, what's up?
Hey, Tom. How are you? I just have a question for you. I was wondering what your thoughts would be on teaching theology K through 12 in public school, what your opinion is on that, whether you would be for it, against it. If you're against it, why? Just curious.
I am, your opinion. Yeah, I'm totally in favor of teaching historical, contextual, comparative religion to young people. I think that the same time that young people are learning about, you know, the founding of this country and the Enlightenment, and this is typically, you know, fourth, fifth, sixth grade, seventh, eighth grade kind of stuff. But at the same time that they're learning about those things, and they should be learning also about the history of feudalism and the history of theocracy and the history of kings and all that other stuff, they should also be, you know, learning the basics of what the belief systems are of Hinduism and Jainism and Buddhism and Islam and Christianity and Judaism. And also they should be learning the basics of shamanism and indigenous people. I think that that kind of a knowledge, now I'm not talking about evangelizing here. I'm talking about, you know, anthropological analysis, you know, much right. like we do, you know, with, you know, how were the founders thinking? We don't sit around and say, oh, let's not even talk about those guys. They owned slaves. They were moral, you know, corrupt. We're not even going to discuss it. No, instead, it's like, okay, we'll set that aside for a moment, that crazy part, and we're going to talk about, you know, what did they think about, you know, how much of a welfare budget should be going to people or something like that. I think that that parsing has to be done, and I think it's a good thing. And I'm glad you think that
because I happen to talk to another radio station on Saturday. It's a religious station, and I asked him if he would be an advocate for teaching theology in school, and he said absolutely not, that it's not the government's role to promote one religion at the expense of another, and I never mentioned anything remotely close to that. I asked him the same exact question I asked you, if theology should be taught K through 12.
Yeah.
And that was his answer, because just quickly, there was a woman that was talking to him, and she was a public school teacher, and I caught the back end of this conversation, and she said, matter-of-factly, that she breaks the rules and puts God before the rules and teaches her second grade class about it.
Yeah.
So I thought, here's a perfect opportunity to ask some religious people how they would feel about teaching theology. And right away went right to, well, oh, no, because we can't promote one over the other. And I never mentioned anything of that.
I think the big concern of many, very, very religious people is that if kids are taught, you know, the story of Thor and the story of Gilgamesh and the story of the, you know, some of the histories of these religions, then they might be inclined to take the intensity of some of these religions a little less seriously.
And if you're trying to scare the hell out of people, and I mean that literally, you know, if you're trying to scare people with hell, or you're trying to control them with religious dogma, or you know, manipulate their thoughts or whatever, it's a whole lot easier to do if they don't realize that, that, you know, whatever religion it is that you're promoting is part of a large spectrum of beliefs.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Well, I did not hear that bumper at all. Welcome. Tom Hartman here with you. We'll be back with more of your calls right after this. Stick around.
I read the news today, oh boy, about a lucky man who made the grade. And though the news was rather sad.
Yeah. And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And you wonder if that was that lucky man Mitt Romney. I just don't know. Lisa in Albuquerque, listening to KABQ. Hey, Lisa, what's up?
Hello. First of all, I'd like to say very, very welcome back. And
thank you.
May you heal quickly.
Thank you.
I just wanted to say that I think we all should remember that, frankly, this election is not going to be one on money. It's going to be one on turnout. And frankly, I feel that any woman who does not do her best to get out there and register to vote is frankly a traitor to her gender.
Well, I wouldn't go the accusatory route, but I would encourage anybody who has a dog in this fight, and it's not just women. You know, all of us, we live in this society, to not only make sure that you're registered to vote, but make sure that you got 10 friends who are.
Yeah, I'm just shocked that 50% of women are not registered.
That is a pretty startling number, although the percentage of men is not all that different. But
true.
working women are underrepresented in the voting pool, and it's a shame. Well said, Lisa. Thank you very much for the call, and thank you for pointing that out. Nikki in East Lyme, Connecticut. Hey, Nikki, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Welcome back. We really missed you.
Thank you.
And
you too.
Speedy recovery. And I wanted to ask about the governor in Florida, isn't he a convicted felon?
His company was convicted of some sort of a crime that had to do with Medicare fraud or something like, you know, I'm sorry, I don't remember the details, and I shouldn't try to represent it because I may get it wrong, and that would be a, you know, bet on me.
Well, I was just wondering if he may not have been convicted, but if his company was convicted, how can he try to prevent other people from voting when I think the law in Florida is if you're convicted of a felony, you can't vote?
Oh, well, so, because we have two different criminal justice systems in America. If you are an individual of working class means or lower than that economically, then there is one criminal justice system for you that includes things like jail and losing the right to vote. On the other hand, if you're a rich person, and particularly if you made your riches through using the corporate form, then there's a whole separate criminal justice system. They even have separate prisons, country club prisons, for the occasional one that gets nailed, the Bernie Madoffs. And usually the ones that get nailed are the ones who ripped off other rich people. That's the unpardonable sin, right? You know, Jamie Dimon can rip off average homeowners, no big deal. But Bernie Madoff, he ripped off some rich people. We're going to throw his butt in jail. But in any case, we have these two criminal justice systems, and I think frankly that's why they can get away with it, and it's a shame, it's a travesty, as you point out, Nikki, and hopefully the American people will start seeing through this and waking up. Thanks a lot for the call, Phil in Santa Barbara, California. Hey, Phil, what's up?
Hey, not much. How you doing today, Tom? You feeling better?
I am. Every day I feel a little better, yeah.
Good. I'm an airline captain. I've written two books on the 9/11 tragedy,
mm-hmm.
and I've done a 7-year investigation into it. And, you know, the way I'm seeing things right now is that this election is more about Guantanamo than anything else. It's like the unspoken subject matter that you know we've all forgotten about. You know,
how so?
If you think of,
And the president actually, you know, did attempt to close Guantanamo, and the Republicans in Congress refused him the funding to do that, and so he backed off. But he actually tried to fulfill that campaign promise. So how does this election become about Gitmo?
Well, I think he backed down on it because they basically shut down the government, you know, until he backed down on it.
Yeah, they had the power of the purse string. I mean, the Constitution says all spending has to originate in the House of Representatives.
Right. But still in all, when you have three branches of government, you have the executive branch and you have the judicial branch, who are both in favor of closing down or in favor of law, then I don't see how in the world it gets trumped by one party and one, you know, hysterical, they got hysterical.
Well, there's two pieces to it, Phil. There's two pieces to it. The first is that the legislative branch is the first among equals. So you read the Constitution. Article 1 is the legislative branch. Article 2 is the executive branch. Article 3 is the judiciary. The founders very much intended for the legislature to be the most powerful of the three. And the reason why is because every single member of the House of Representatives is up for re-election every 2 years. And one-third of the Senate is up for re-election every 2 years as well, although it wasn't the case when the country was founded. But still, with the House of Representatives, everybody gets re-elected every 2 years. And so they wanted a lot of power close to the people. Now, that being said, the Republicans have been exploiting this. Gitmo's a smaller example. There's some much larger ones. For example, the effort that, you know, Nancy Pelosi actually passed legislation that would have said to companies that have shipped jobs overseas or shipped factories overseas, we're no longer going to give you tax breaks for doing that. In fact, if you bring those factories home, we will give you a tax break, but otherwise you're going to have to start paying taxes. And the Republicans shot that down too. So the second part of this is that what you're seeing here is a very concerted effort by the Republican Party that has very little to do on the surface with logic. They're making decisions that are actually destructive to working people, actually destructive to the future of America, but they're doing them. There actually is a madness behind it, a logic to their madness, and what that is, very simply, is they're doing them because they believe that if the president fails, if they can prevent him from having significant successes, if they can prevent him from keeping his campaign promises like closing Gitmo, if they can prevent him from getting us fully out of the Bush Great Depression, then that will hurt him politically. I mean, you know, Mitch McConnell, the day of the inauguration, said, our number one job is to make President Obama a one-term president. They had that secret meeting over at the caucus room and organized this whole thing. And so I think that's the other part of it. So thanks a lot for the call. Excellent point. We will be back 57 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you live on this Wednesday. And I'm still alive. It's amazing. We'll be back with more right after this.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, live and kicking. They even when they screw up a surgery, they can't keep me down. I'm back. Sort of. Apologies for the less than stellar audio system here. I'm in by telephone, but hey, it's better than nothing at all, in my opinion. And hopefully by Monday, I've got one more visit to the hospital on Friday to hopefully resolve all this stuff, and hopefully by Monday I'll be back in the actual office, and you'll be hearing me with all that, all the cool bells and whistles and whatnot. Okay, the Republican Party has now approved, they call it the most conservative platform in modern history. I would submit that calling this conservative is a huge mistake. I would call it the most hard right radical platform in modern history. I mean, this is just absolutely extraordinary. There's, of course, the Todd Akin stuff is in there. But then in addition to that, they want to say no legal recognition of same-sex couples. The committee has embraced an extreme anti-gay language, so they're implicitly, or perhaps explicitly, you know, condoning the violence that goes on against gays in America. Keep in mind that the one group in the United States that is at highest risk for suicide is gay teenagers. and the GOP just wants to make life more miserable for them. This is pretty amazing, pretty amazing. Romney advisor Jim Bopp called a gay marriage a counterfeit marriage. You know, I wonder how many of these guys who think that they're biblically based, you know, if you were to say, okay, Solomon had, what, 700 wives, didn't he? How many of those were counterfeit? No, well, let's not talk about that. They want to replicate the Arizona-style immigration laws. The Republicans have decided they're all about this. Chris Kobach, this from Center for American Progress, same progress blog, by the way. Chris Kobach, who wrote the now mostly invalidated immigration laws in Arizona and Alabama, pushed for language for a border fence, a national e-verify system, end of state tuition for illegal immigrants, and an end to sanctuary cities. They're approving that. You know, I think we all agree that countries need to protect their borders and certainly their workforces. I think that's really what it all comes down to. And it's really tragic because you can easily protect your workforce. You know, and you do that by going after your employers. You know, I gave a speech a couple of years ago in Australia, and they paid a really hefty speaking fee. It was a large organization. It was traveling all around the country. It was a $10,000 speaking fee, which was a lot of money for me back then. And it still is a lot of money. And I, you know, it took me a month and a half to get the government of Australia to give me a work permit because I was being paid. I was coming over to be paid. And same thing when I lived in Germany for that year. Louise and I lived in Germany. We had to get permission from the government to be there. And it was largely on our employer's shoulders, as it were. So this is – now, we don't have an illegal immigrant problem in the United States. We have an illegal employer problem. And that's the level at which it should be addressed. But the Republicans have no interest in addressing that. They would rather talk about, have you noticed how many brown people there are? Right. So they're throwing that in. They want to audit the Fed. This is, you know, throwing a sop, I guess is the phrase. There's not a sop, it's a wet towel. But anyway, throwing a bone to Ron Paul to try and keep some of the Paul folks in. No women in combat. They call that social experimentation. Somebody should tell them about the Greeks. Not to mention them, but in any case. Washington, D.C., where I live. No statehood. Nope. Sorry, you guys get to pay taxes, but you still cannot have a representative who is going to vote because Washington, D.C.'s population is, you know, not mostly rich white people. It's a very varied population here in D.C., and D.C. tends to vote Democratic. So God forbid the District of Columbia, which has more people in it than many states, God forbid the District of Columbia, the District of the Goddess, as it was originally designed by the founders, should have two senators and a member of Congress who actually votes. Instead, we have Eleanor Holmes Norton, who is just a wonderful person and a great representative, but she does not have the power to vote. She can talk all day long, but she can't vote. And we have no senators. It's insane. So they're going to say, yeah, let's keep that's a cool thing. We like that. And in fact, we want to expand the gun rights in Washington, D.C. D.C. kind of got over it with, you know, people shooting each other sometime back and banned. We have some pretty restrictive gun laws in this city. And the Republican National Committee, in their infinite wisdom, is urging the D.C. City Council to expand gun rights. And then finally, they want to make sure that there are no new taxes on millionaires and billionaires. Quote, with exceptions for only war and national emergencies, end quote. And they're also going to deliberately hobble future Congresses through a cap limiting all government spending to historical average percentages of GDP. In other words, if you try and pull another one of those New Deal things like FDR did, where he pretty much doubled or tripled federal spending and saved the nation, or like Lyndon Johnson did with the Great Society and cut poverty in half and brought an entire generation of young African-Americans into the middle class, not just African-Americans, by the way, a lot of poor people in Appalachia and rural parts all over the country. If you're going to try and invest in something, you're going to try and do a Jack Kennedy NASA, you're going to try and make America a bigger, better, stronger country. No, sorry, not going to allow that. Can't do that.
Can't do that. That's for the billionaires, don't you know? They're the ones running the country. It really is, when you think about it, it really is extraordinary. Shelley in Detroit, Michigan, listening on WDTW. Hey, Shelley, what's in your mind today?
Nothing much. I just got back from Vice President Biden's speech in Detroit, and he's a very passionate speaker. It was very interesting to go see that. But he mentioned something that kind of sticks with me. It was a little anecdote about when him and the president and their wives were getting ready to go to an event, and Mrs. Obama looks over at all of them and says, you know, we wouldn't be here if it wasn't for student aid. And I just thought that was so poignant, because it just illustrates the difference between the two parties. And Mr. Romney likes to say how Obama is so out of touch. And I don't understand. I wouldn't be able to be working in Detroit right now if it wasn't for Pell Grants. I mean, I graduated in 2011, and I wouldn't have been able to do that. If it wasn't for Pell Grants. And we have a president who is in the same boat, essentially. I just wanted to bring that up. I mean, I think it's a big issue that's not really as talked about as it should be. I mean, it's 9 million people that are students that benefited from the Pell Grants from Obama specifically. And that's a large workforce that can now enter because they have degrees from college.
And that's a bunch of people that the Republicans want to make sure they're not able to vote. And by the way, hey, the banks can make some more money off these people. I mean, we've got $1 trillion right now in student debt out there.
Yeah, and I mean, I heard Romney talking about, well, students, if you want to go to college, you have to ask your parents. And I lost my parents right after high school, and I don't know what I would have done. I mean, I would be destitute on the streets for all I know. And so, I mean, there's so many of us that are in the same boat. And, I mean, I think I used to work with foster kids in California and farm workers' kids, and a great program that was run by the state called the California Conservation Corps. And that in itself wouldn't be there if there was this type of Republican budget in place. I mean, it would be cut. And all those fires, who would be fighting those fires right now? Because it's, you know, there's not enough firefighters in the West right now that can handle the type of disaster that's over there. And It's the conservation corps and the volunteers.
This is the Republican positions, in my mind, are fundamentally un-American. And Shelley, isn't Joe Biden a great speaker?
He is, and he made a funny joke, actually, about how Romney was saying how Obama's campaign is misunderstanding offshoring versus outsourcing. He said, well, when you're standing in the unemployment line, one guy looks at the other guy and says, was your job outsourced or offshore?
Yeah, that's a good
this
one.
Is the
Thank
Tom
much,
Hartman
Shelley.
Program.
We'll be back with more of Anything Goes Wednesday. Hey, I'm back! You can't keep me going. So sort of Anything Goes Wednesday. You know, we're just... In fact, I suspect it's going to be a kind of an Anything Goes summer. Because there's just like all these little things going on all over the place. So, Matt in Fort Worth, Texas. Matt says you want to disagree with me about something. What's up?
Well, Tom, even though you and the other Democrats are trying to destroy our country that I served 11 years in the military to defend, I am glad you're better.
Thank you.
I do find it strange that liberals are criticizing Romney for any outsourcing that he may have done while he was at Bain. If he did any, I don't know. What he was obviously doing was trying to save a company from going bankrupt.
Or increase the profitability of a company. You don't make hundreds of millions of dollars saving companies. You make hundreds of millions of dollars
increasing
the profitability.
How much Obama has outsourced with our stimulus tax money that he sent overseas. I also find it strange that...
An awful lot of that stimulus money stayed right here. In fact, most of it is in things like road building, and you can't send road building outside the United States. But you know, you do make a good point, Matt, and that is that, you know, personalizing this on either side, whether it's Obama or Romney, they're both wrong on trade. They are both wrong on trade. They, you know, from the George Washington administration, when Alexander Hamilton proposed his report on manufacturers in 1791 and it was passed by Congress in 1793, from that time until the Nixon administration, we had an absolute commitment in this country that if you want to do business in this country, we will give you all kinds of privileges and all kinds of benefits. You get tax breaks, you get limited liability, you get all kinds of cool stuff. In exchange for that,
you got to keep your jobs here. And if you send your jobs overseas, when you bring that product back and try and sell it here, we're going to tax it at the border. It was called a tariff. And the last 30 years, we have seen this Chicago School economic theory, Milton Friedman's economic theories, which have been now totally discredited, destroy the economic infrastructure and the manufacturing base of this country. And at the exact same time that we were doing that, the Chinese were embracing the exact opposite. They were embracing the George Washington administration's policies, which lasted through all those presidencies. And you know, look at what has happened in that nation, how they've built now a great industrial power. You'd think that we would be smart enough to figure it out, wouldn't you?
I also find it strange that liberals try to act like a hero by cowardly hiding behind the, I'm not going to tell a woman what to do with her body, while they turn around for the ability to play God and decide if another human being lives or not.
Yeah. Well, Matt, as I said, I think the whole abortion thing is something that is more complex than either of those little bumper sticker statements. And I always find it ironic, and therefore I try not to do it, when it's two men sitting around talking about, you know, what should be available to women, whether it's birth control or abortion or anything else. It's not a good place for us to hang out. Craig in Des Moines, Iowa. Hey, Craig, what's on your mind?
Well, to kind of follow up on what he just said, the abortion issue, the Republicans, of course, are against abortion because they can send their loved ones overseas to get an abortion. Rich, it's against. The Republicans are against poor women for reproductive rights.
Yeah, that's by and large been the history. Is that you know, back before 73, when abortion was illegal, there was this epidemic of teenage girls getting DNCs, and they were the more affluent ones. And yeah, there's ways around things, and this is one of the problems with making things illegal. It's why, frankly, I think that I'm getting redundant here, but I think that abortion is one of many things. That, you know, the war on drugs is another. There's a whole bunch of them that are really cultural issues. We shouldn't be dealing with these as legal issues. Or if we do, we need to deal with them first as cultural issues and get some, you know, clear understanding of what we're actually talking about and some sort of consensus. Joe in Harvey, Illinois, listening to WCPT. Hey, Joe, what's up?
Good afternoon. Glad you're back.
Thank you, Joe.
Before you left, you were saying that Republicans had to, in order to win the election, they had to lie and steal to win the election, and that's true. But what I want to say is, like, for instance, this new commercial that came out with Romney and the Republicans saying that Obama took $716 million out of Medicare. Now, we know that's a lie. Mm-hmm. So the Democrats, where they make a huge mistake if they are too slow to counterpunch. Now, whatever state that Romney's running that commercial in, the Democrats should have a counterpunch commercial in each state. Because, like, for instance, Progressive Radio, each Progressive Radio station, there's got to be at least 10 right-wing talk show radio stations for every one progressive radio station. So
try more like 95.
Republicans control. Say that again.
I said try more like 95 or 99 to 1.
Yeah, exactly. So they control the message. I mean, most people, they go to work, they come home, and they may be listening to the radio on the way home, or they're watching commercials on TV. So the election is not won November 6th. The election is won now. It's who controls the message. That's how the elections get won. So the Democrats are way too slow to counterpunch. Like I say, every state that commercial is in, and that commercial is a complete lie. We all know that. We listen to progressive radio. Most people don't listen to the radio, and they don't pay attention to politics. So the Democrats are going to have to learn how to counterpunch quickly. It's just like a gunfight. When you're watching the Western, the guy that draws the fastest wins.
Yeah.
It's the same thing with politics.
Yeah. You know, the Clinton administration, or the Clinton campaign, the 92 Clinton campaign, had what they called the rapid response room. And, they, you know, no attack will be unanswered within 24-hour period.
And that may well be being replicated in the Obama administration. One of the big problems we have right now is that there's going to be several $1 billion spent in this election. Most of that money is going to network and cable television outlets. And and most of it's going to be Republican money. So, you know, who are they going to show their bias toward? So that's one of the problems, too. So, you know, the president, and I know many Democrats have been out pointing out these lies, Joe, as you point out, and it just doesn't get covered by the media. Thanks a lot for the call, Joe.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And apropos of what Joe was just sharing with you, if you missed the first hour of our show, I've got an FDR clip here that's going to lift the hair off the top of your head. I had my mute button pushed there. Welcome back, Tom Hartman, here with you, broadcasting live from Washington, D.C. And I've still got some tubes and stuff stuck in me, so I'm doing the show here from home by telephone. My apologies for the audio not being the very, very best, but I had to get back on the air. and we were getting a lot of people wondering and worrying, and so I'm on the mend. My last repair work from what was apparently some sort of something popped, I don't know who did what wrong or how, that's something we'll figure out later. That last repair work should be on Friday, and so hopefully everything will be just fine after that. No big deal stuff here. What should have been a very small surgery, you know, turned into a mistake. But I'm back, and I'm here. And Noah in Madison, Wisconsin, you are on the air.
Hi, Tom. Great to have you back, man.
Thank you.
Hope you're feeling better. I have a question about this documentary I saw on the documentary channel. It's called End of the Road. It's about fiat currencies and the gold standard. And their premise is that back in 1971, Richard Nixon took us off the gold standard where we had, like, this ratio of money to gold reserves. And that's supposedly the problem about the – been the problem ever since. That the reason
why
they
explain why Nixon did that.
No, they didn't really. Just because I think because everybody, other countries were asking for their gold and we didn't have enough, or there was all this speculation, but there was never really an answer.
Yeah. Well, here's what happened.
My question.
And okay, go ahead with your question.
Okay, go ahead. Okay,
I'm guessing that my answer to my comment is actually going to answer your question, but I'm anticipating your question. So let's hear what is it.
My question is, how is a fiat currency any different than a currency backed by gold when both of them have to rely on faith in the currency by consumers and by business people? When gold isn't used for anything except for trading it and holding it and not really, I mean, how does it have intrinsic value when it's just changing hands? And how is that any different than a fiat currency?
Well, there are some substantial differences between a gold-backed currency and a fiat currency. Gold is relatively unique as a metal in that it doesn't oxidize, it doesn't deteriorate over time, it doesn't connect well with other metals, so it doesn't, you know, it's something that is stable over a long period of time. So if you're going to try and create a currency based on something like that, I mean, you know, early societies based currencies on things like shells, you know, or trees that, you know, little branches that were carved a certain way, or the number of, I was down at Corral in Peru, the oldest city in history. It's been found down there. It's a 6,000-year-old city or maybe longer than that. And they used knots on a cloth to indicate money. But in any case, so gold is pretty good if you're going to do a gold standard. But here's the problem. The reason why Nixon had to take us off the gold standard is that if you have your money based on gold and there is a significant dislocation in your economy, then you don't have the flexibility to react to that. And what had happened was the Arab oil boycott. And the Arab oil boycott had just, you know, brought this country to its knees. I mean, the price of oil had gone through the roof, and pretty much everything is based on oil. And Nixon was trying to deal with it with wage and price controls and everything else. But what was happening was this was the genesis of the inflation that Jimmy Carter ultimately inherited. It really started during the Ford administration, right after Nixon had resigned. And you're right. Other countries were saying, if you want to buy oil from us, we'll take some gold, please. And we didn't have enough. And that's the problem of a gold standard, is that it is a straitjacket. Now, the problem with a fiat currency is that if you have a corrupt political system that controls that fiat currency, they can just, you know, run the printing presses all day long and, you know, try to pay off old debts with current dollars that have far less value. And this is what happened with the Weimar Republic, for example, in Germany in the 1920s. After the Treaty of Versailles, when all the Allies got together and said, okay, we are going to punish Germany for starting World War II, or for their role in World War One, for all the damage that they did. And they're going to have to repay us, you know, a certain number of Deutschmarks, and it was denominated in Deutschmarks. And they're going to have to repay us, and they're going to have to repay us fast. And it was a really large amount of money. I don't remember the dollars now, but it was huge. And so the Germans said, okay, fine, we'll just run the printing presses, reduce the value of the Deutschmark, and then it spun out of control. And that led to the hyperinflation of the 20s in Germany that then led to the rise of Hitler. So the problem with fiat currencies is that they can be exploited like that, or they could be used. I mean, you could argue that Germany was just actually doing the rational thing. They were able to pay off all those debts with an amount of, you know, with a billion Deutschmarks that would have bought a loaf of bread, but which was their goal. It was basically they were saying, you know, up yours to the Allies who were saying, we want all this money. But the way we tried to avoid that here in the United States with the creation of the Fed in 1913 was by saying that if the Fed is creating money and loaning it to the federal government, to the U.S. government, in other words, buying treasuries, it has to go through a commercial bank. And the theory being that there would be this other layer, and there would be another layer of transparency and all that. Really what has happened, though, is it's just become a very profitable thing for the big banks. You know, whenever the Fed does quantitative easing, you know, when they buy treasuries, when they loan money to the federal government, what they're doing is, you know, the J.P. Morgan, you know, Jamie Dimon's just taking a piece off the top. So we've got this, you know, we've lost the gold standard. We've got a fiat currency that has some real problems. And you know, Ron Paul has pointed out some of those, but the gold standard is not the answer. I think, frankly, the answer is for us to do some countries are looking at doing now, what Canada tried back in the 70s, and finally under lobbying pressure from the banks, they backed away, and that is to nationalize the Fed, to put the Fed under the Treasury Department, and go back to doing it the way that, frankly, Alexander Hamilton, who is not my political friend on most things, but still, the way that Hamilton proposed back in the late 1700s and the early 1800s. So, make any sense, Noah?
Yeah, that does make a lot of sense. Thank you, Tom. Okay.
You're welcome. Thanks a lot for the call. Good to hear from you. Chip in Unionville, Pennsylvania. Hey, Chip, what's on your mind?
Hi, Tom. Welcome back. I'd like to wish the best of you to yourself and your wife.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
My question was, I've been laid off for about 6 months now, and I'm going to get recalled back. But I've been doing a lot of reading, a lot of issues from you and from everybody else. But my biggest problem right now is political parties. I would like to know if you have any recommendations for the history of our political parties in the United States.
Well, that's a good one. I've written two books that have a fair amount of stuff about that in them. One is called Screwed, and the other is called Cracking the Code. They have more to do with the philosophy of the parties and how they evolved. I also wrote a book, What Would Jefferson Do?, that talks about the creation of the Democratic Party, which was originally called the Democratic-Republican Party that Jefferson started. But the big problem that we have in this country, and James Madison, you know, the father of the Constitution, recognized it. And in Federalist number 10 or 12, he went off on a long rant about, you know, he had just had this sudden realization and he was freaked out. That if you have elections that are first past the post winner take all elections, like we have here in the United States, where 51% wins, then you really can only have two parties. And if you had three parties, you could have
somebody with 34% winning. If you had four parties, you could have somebody with 26% winning. If you had five parties, you could have somebody with 21% winning. And having somebody run the country who only got 21% of the vote, that's not Democratic, small d. It's not a republic, small r. And Madison didn't know what to do about it. He just, you know, I mean, democracy hadn't really been tried since the Greeks, and they did it in some ways very substantially differently than we had. It had been 3,000 years earlier. So what Madison did is he wrote Federalist 10 or Federalist 12, begging people not to form political parties, you know, with the idea that if political parties never formed, then it would always be, you know, the quality and wisdom of the person who's being elected and all this kind of thing. And it was a very noble idea. But, you know, he saw the flaw in our system. And the way to solve that flaw is, there's two ways to solve that flaw. One is, and this is why most other countries don't have the problem we do. There are five democracies in the world that basically have the problem that we do, and they're all older democracies. Because in 1861, John Stuart Mill, and I think it was his book on liberty, came up with this idea of proportional representation, where he said, instead of, you know, 51% of the vote, let's say that there's 100 seats in parliament. If a party gets 8% of the vote, they get 8 seats. Party gets 12% of the vote, they get 12 seats. That's called proportional representation. It's possible to put that into law in the United States without amending the Constitution. There's some good people thinking on and working on that. The other is instant runoff voting, which is proportional representation is how virtually all the major democracies in the world work, with the exception of Australia and New Zealand, who also are old democracies, and they have the same first past the post winner take all that we do. So what they did was what's called ranked voting or instant runoff voting, where, you know, if I had voted for Ralph Nader in 2000 and my second vote was for Al Gore, you know, when Nader was clearly not winning, then my vote would have flipped over to the second candidate. The Green Party has been a big advocate for this, and I'd encourage you to learn more about instant runoff voting, because I think there's over 300 communities in America doing it now. San Francisco is the biggest. I think that's a great solution.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Back with more here as we're wrapping up my first day back. Boy, it feels good to be back talking with you all. We'll be back.
From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay, democracy is coming to the USA.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Is it Bobby in Elbord, Texas?
Yes, it is.
Hey, you're on the air. What's up?
Okay, I just heard someone from the Heritage Foundation on C-SPAN. He's a fellow with Heritage, but he was talking as if he were in charge of welfare, and he talked about how Obama has just changed the welfare system from requiring some work time. And what he said just didn't make sense, but I didn't hear any negative
any pushback.
Things, any pushback, yes. So I it's just upsetting to me to hear that, because
here's what's happened. Before the Clinton administration and after the Johnson administration, most welfare programs were fairly open-ended. You could stay on them as long as you needed to stay on them. And some people, you know, that tragically became multi-generational. It's a conundrum, you know, what do you do? How do you do this? And so Clinton's reform of welfare was to say, I believe it was 5 years. At the end of 5 years, if you don't have a job, you get nothing anymore. And in the meantime, you've got to prove that you're trying to work. And that worked just fine during a booming economy when there were lots of jobs and there were a lot of opportunities for people to move out of welfare and into the workplace and, you know, all those. And as we moved to a service economy where there was just this sudden increase in low wage jobs, which is the kind of jobs that people on welfare transitioned into, while high wage jobs were all vanishing. But what has happened over the last 3 years is, since the Bush Great Depression here, you've got people who have been on welfare for a couple of years, their benefits are running out, and there's no way they could find a job, no matter how hard they try.
So what Obama did was he said to the states, because the states actually administer these programs, the federal government pays the dollars, but the states make the choices. He said to the states, I'm going to take some of the straitjacket off of this thing. If you want, if you as a state choose, now your legislature is going to have to do this, but if you as a state choose, you want to be able to give people an extra 6 months on welfare or an extra 12 months or soften that work requirement until the jobs start coming back, you can do that. So what Obama did was a very traditionally conservative Republican thing, which is to say we're going to give more power to the states and take some power away from the federal government. But the Republicans have spun this around to say that what Obama is doing is he's undoing Clinton's, you know, welfare to workfare program. And there's, you know, as is so often the case, there's this little tiny germ of truth that is a rational germ of truth. I mean, you know, it's people's lives are in the balance here, but they have turned it into the big lie. And so that's the story. And I hope you share it with others. Bobby, thanks a lot for the call. And in fact, I said earlier, I got to play this FDR clip for you. Shano, this will be clip number. Let's play both of them. Clip number one. We've got a couple minutes here. Clip number one. This is Franklin Roosevelt, 1944, running for reelection. And he talks about propaganda, a very special propaganda technique. Here he is.
The opposition in this year has already imported into this campaign a very interesting thing because it's foreign. They have imported the propaganda technique invented by the dictators abroad. Remember, a number of years ago, there was a book, Mein Kampf, written by Hitler himself.
So here's FDR saying the Republicans are taking a play out of Hitler's book. Now, what was that play? What is that incredibly powerful propaganda technique that the Republicans, according to Franklin Roosevelt, the president of the United States in 1944, the Republicans were using? Here's Roosevelt explaining the propaganda technique that the Republican Party was using.
Remember, a number of years ago, there was a book, Mein Kampf, written by Hitler himself. The technique was all set out in Hitler's book, and it was copied by the aggressors of Italy and Japan. According to that technique, you should never use a small falsehood. Always a big one. For its very fantastic nature would make it more credible. If only you keep repeating it over and over and over again.
There you go. Tell a big lie and repeat it over and over and over again. And that's what, you know, the caller earlier, she was talking about the Heritage Foundation saying that, you know, Obama's rolling back welfare and all this kind of stuff. And that's exactly, you know, that's the big lie. You know, there's actually a reasonable, a rational thing. Or you got the Republicans running around going, oh, Obama cut $700 billion from Medicare. Well, actually, he took $700 billion that was being basically people on Medicare being ripped off by big insurance companies and said, you know, they're taking 20, 30, 40, 50% profit on this stuff. We can do this ourselves. We can provide more people with more benefits. We can close the donut hole. I mean, the drug companies aren't happy. They're not making as much profit. But we can close the donut hole. We can make things work. And we can save $700 billion. And the actuaries at the CBO, the Congressional Budget Office, which is totally nonpartisan, said, yep, Obama not only is saving that money, he is strengthening Medicare, and he's going to make it last 8 more years than it would have otherwise. In other words, before something has to be done, like, you know, the taxes need to be raised slightly or something like that. So, again, it's the big lie strategy that is being used. And it is so sad to see in this country a political party officially embracing the big lie strategy. We'll be back tomorrow. Hope you had a great day today. And don't forget, democracy begins when you get active, when you show up and participate, when you get 10 friends registered to vote, when you share the real stories of what's going on. Thanks so much for being with us. Tag, you're it. See you tomorrow.
listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to TomHartman.com.